Hello and welcome to a Touchdown Fracker podcast. I'm your host Lewis, and on tonight's show we're going to be discussing pretty much everything the week has thrown at us, as well as your listeners' questions. So before we get started, let me introduce tonight's guests. We have two Chelsea fans, Daniel and Ife, two Arsenal fans, Mickey and Ol, and a lonely United fan, Io. Okay, so let's kick off today with the Manuel Neuer debate. A lot of controversy over his inclusion on the Ballon d'Or award. So, Io, do you think Manuel Neuer's inclusion in the nominations is warranted, or don't you think goalkeepers should be included in the award nominations?
I think any footballer should be included in the award nominations because football is like a team game. Certain teams, their goalkeeper may be their best player, or the defender may be their best player. And I think it's a good thing that goalkeepers, you know, get this recognition because it could inspire that. A lot of kids want to be goalkeepers, especially when Neuer plays with a bit of flair. But in terms of this specific case, I don't think he deserves to be in the top three because... Okay, fair enough, Suarez can't be in a top three because he's out here eating human beings like kebabs and that. That's cool. But like, with the performance of his teammate, in my opinion, Ryan Robben, I don't know how that can be overlooked in regards to the world's top three footballers because he was phenomenal. All throughout for Bayern Munich, and in the World Cup, you saw him how he even carried Holland. So I'm really, really shocked that he didn't get a look in. Even players like Lahm, who was, I think, he was phenomenal for the last 18 months, 2 years, and he is technically a defender. So that'd be really good to see somebody like Lahm nominated. But I don't know. I just think because football is the entertainment business, and yeah, I do believe Neuer's entertaining. The way Robert lights up games, wins games for his team and country, and has been consistent for the last two seasons, I think he definitely should have been in the recognition ahead of Neuer.
So, just going back on to, obviously your point is that Manuel Neuer, goalkeepers should be nominated, but what more would Manuel Neuer have to do in order to be nominated?
I think that's the danger with obviously being a goalkeeper in football because, in my opinion, if every goalkeeper does his job, there's no goals in the game. And people don't come to watch football not to see goals. Do you know what I mean? So I think there's always going to be a bias towards the people that, you know, provide that attacking spark. So I think it's always going to be hard for somebody like Manuel Neuer to be nominated. But I just think that's how it is because if goalkeepers do their business, nobody's scoring goals. But I personally think there should be like an individual type award for each position. So like you have like the goalkeepers one, the defenders one, midfielders one, forwards one, and the overall Ballon d'Or. I think that would be good because that way you'll have all different types of players being recognised on the world stage, which would be really good.
Mm. Daniel, do you think defenders get a lack of recognition on the world stage for the Ballon d'Or, or do you think it should be reserved for attacking players?
I think Fabio Cannavaro, he got one, didn't he?
Yeah, after the back of Italy winning the World Cup, I think.
Yeah, I feel like they're not superstars enough. I don't think goalkeepers should be exempt from getting it. I don't think defenders should be exempt from getting it. But they're not. It's going to be harder for them to get because they're not superstar quality. Everybody, it's almost like the hipster thing to do is try to find an alternative. Let's show Fabio Cannavaro. When it comes down to it, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo is doing more for his team than Neuer is. I don't know. If a goalkeeper, you know, you've got Rogério Ceni in Brazil.
Yeah.
Who scores goals. He kind of takes it to the next level. If you've got a goalkeeper that is winning you games, game after game with, like, top save, penalty saves, in that case, yeah. But unless you're doing something, worldly, then I don't want to hear defenders, to be honest. I don't want to hear goalkeepers. Because when it comes down to it, the most important players on the pitch. Goalkeepers can be very important, but watching games, and we see European football, the most important players on the pitch normally are the players that score goals. So, yes, they can win. Neuer, I can't say I watch German football, and even the Champions League, I don't always watch all games, but I don't think he's done enough to like win it, and I think it's bullshit if he does win.
Hmm.
But no, okay. To be fair, I can't say that. I haven't really watched his performances, but I think that it could be a hipster type thing. I think when Fabio Cannavaro won it, I was upset because I don't think he deserved to win it.
Hmm, okay. Mickey, what's your opinion on this? I know you always like to have an alternative view.
Yeah, like my thing is, you know, I personally won't have an alternative view because of its alternative, you know.
No, I didn't mean that. I just meant like.
No. I'm just saying, generally speaking, like.
That's just the statement before
point.
He says it.
It's not alternative because essentially I'm looking at it purely on the fact that it's a player that deserves to be in the discussion.
In the discussion, but what if he wins it?
If he wins it, then I would understand as to why people have reservations as to him winning it.
Yeah,
but I would also understand why he has won it, because at the end of the day, he was just as crucial to Bayern Munich's league victory and also cup victory during the domestic season. And he was also incredibly crucial in Germany winning the World Cup. I remember the game versus Algeria. He was literally the best player on the pitch, and I'm pretty sure that was a knockout round as well.
So this is you selling Neuer as Ballon d'Or.
Yeah,
compared to his rivals, he deserves it.
Well, the reason why it's difficult to compare him to other nominees is because the other nominees tend to be attacking players, and you just can't compare the contribution of an out-and-out defensive player to an out-and-out attacking player.
Attackers
get more contribution.
No, but the only thing you can compare them in their overall contribution in their respective fields.
Yeah, you can, exactly.
So the way I would compare a defender to an attacking player would be to say, okay, how well did this defender do his job in comparison to this attacker who did his job?
Which is smart.
Hey, hold on, wait. But you always say we can't compare a defensive midfielder to
He doesn't track. Say that. I don't believe that. He doesn't say that.
No, he has said that.
No, because he just said that you can compare with old rules.
Yeah, but I'm saying
that's a contradiction.
Yeah, but that's what he done.
No way, he didn't say that.
Yes,
Chris.
What I've said is that we're not comparing two players.
Oh, no.
I've said to take into account. So I've said in the past that sometimes if I'm comparing an attacking midfielder to maybe a defensive midfielder, then it doesn't really make sense.
You just said before that you can compare them.
He's going old, man. He's getting the far apart.
No, not really. Even to be honest with you, I'm not admitting anything different.
I don't know, man. It sounds like a contradiction. Alright.
Even if it's a contradiction, like I don't see the problem in changing your way of thinking.
Yeah, exactly. The question was, Neuer gets it. You said you'd understand, but you wouldn't. That
I don't understand why he. I don't understand why he won it, because on top of his performance for Bayern Munich and for Germany over the overall year, he's done it. You know, don't get me wrong, like Buffon has had an outstanding season. Victor Valdes has had an outstanding season. You know, we've had goalkeepers that played very, 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 very well throughout a calendar year. But I think when a player does that on top of revolution, you know, being a revolutionary in his position or evolving the position.
How did he evolve it?
There's been keepers that always used to charge out before Neuer. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but then there's been players that have done the false number nine for, like Messi has. But to do it in the modern, to interpret it in the modern game,
so he didn't evolve.
And to do it successfully.
I don't think the difference is the modern game. In terms of the modern game, goalkeeper's position is not really much that has changed apart from kicking. In terms of goal kicks, accuracy of distribution, there's not really much else.
Also, in terms of like their ball playing skills as well.
Statistically, as to the distance, as to how modern keepers have actually started playing further up the pitch. In terms of how many passes they make.
Yeah, and if you just about distribution.
Did Neuer start that?
That's what I'm talking about, distribution. That's not Neuer.
At the end of the day, there's nothing new in football. Everything is evolving. There's nothing new. Same way there was false number nines in the 1950s, where people talk about false number nines,
but
like Messi.
I just want to get clear. You're saying Neuer.
My point is, he evolved the position in a modern way.
How did he do that?
Because Barthes is wrong. Like I said, for me, he plays half of a goalkeeper and half as a sweeper. Like, he really does it on a full-time
basis.
That's not
Neuer, though. That's like, if you watch Dutch football, they've been doing that for ages.
From early. Like, that's not new. And that's not
hold on. Would you say, we're stuck on that. Would you say then that when Messi popularised the false number nine,
was that not seen as something in the modern game that wasn't prevalent?
No, I don't think Messi popularised. Not for me. I don't think Messi didn't popularise though. I don't know.
What I'm saying, I've never heard of the full stamina before Messi.
No,
we spoke about it in school days, man.
Wait, I want to say, in terms of false number nine, though, how many other teams actually adopted the false number nine? It was just Barca. So how can we say popularised?
Excuse me?
No, it was a system for Barca. It was a system for Barca.
So in the last three to five years...
Barcelona did popularize the evil, yeah, not Messi's, but Barca. They popularized the false number nine. I agree with that.
My point is the fact that I'm just using that as an example.
Yeah.
There's always tactical and positional shifts that won't be prevalent in whatever area of the game.
Yeah.
And then there'll be a player or a team that'll come along and do something that isn't really new, but it isn't prevalent in the game. So their interpretation is context with what's happening today.
My thing is, I don't think that should be really a criteria for like the best player over a season. I don't really think that should
be. The reason I say it should be taken into account is because to do something new or something that's uncommon takes an element of risk. So to not only do that as an individual in Excel, but to do it in amongst a highly successful team.
Chris, you watch German football? You watch German football?
Of course.
Yeah, because I don't watch German football. So you've got the kind of perspective to be able to see who else is in the running for the Ballon d'Or.
The top three, obviously Ronaldo and Messi. I think in terms of the overall, it was guys like Luke Cruz, Rooney was involved, I'm pretty sure, Robben, Lahm. It's the usual, to be honest with you, it's the usual lot that you get.
Suspects. Okay, but you've got the kind of perspective because you probably watch the most football here, I'm not sure. But
I wouldn't assume, but
that's what I'm saying, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But so your top three, would Neuer be in there?
Top three, personally speaking, my top three wouldn't include Neuer.
Yeah.
However, I'm not of the mindset that, okay, if I've got a top three or a top five, it's just them. Like, for me, it's just the way I just measure it, and I'm like, you know what, I'll go for this top three, but if this other player was involved, obviously the official body, then I wouldn't be too mad, because I can understand that choice has its merits, and that's my only point.
But
I think
I generally don't think Manuel Neuer has merited his position over people who, like, for example, like, maybe just Iron Robben. I think Di Maria had a fantastic season. I think Luka Modric was immense. Even Yaya Toure, Sergio Aguero, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, so many players.
No, he was the extra choice.
I would say more so because of World Cup. It was a World Cup.
Okay. Everyone's going about because he's a goalkeeper, right? Correct?
Yeah.
What is a goalkeeper's primary job? Is to stop goals entering the net by making it safe.
Of course.
He's a goalkeeper that he's playing for probably the best national side. And the best club size. So he's not even tested on a consistent basis. Apart from obviously he's showcasing, he's able to play the ball at feet. So what his primary role, he's actually not being able to be tested.
The only reservation I have with that point of view is that, to be fair, any goalkeeper that plays for a top team will not get tested as much.
Yeah. Exactly. So
any goalkeeper.
Yeah, no.
What happens is, it doesn't mean that they don't get tested in the traditional way. They still get tested in other ways.
Yeah, concentration.
Isn't it more? Yeah.
Mignolet is not excelling
game,
at Liverpool.
You're going to need super keepers.
You don't want a Mignolet.
Hey, hear my point. Yeah, my point is this. Okay. That is his primary role.
But Pep Guardiola hasn't given that to him as just his primary role. He's added in other things.
He's in a primary role for a goalkeeper. So, people's giving me points, but Manuel Neuer only conceded 12 goals. Of course he only conceded 12, something like that. When your team is having 99.9% possession of 45 shots and the team has one shot on one corner per game, that's not just down to Manuel Neuer's brilliance, but also the brilliance of the tactical team, his team dominance, and how his team defends as a team. So, that's the thing.
In that sense, I agree with you. But I just think that in today's game, we can't can't keep on using traditional variables or metrics to measure everyone.
Okay. I want somebody to actually come and tell me in detail the individual brilliance by Manuel Neuer that is above the individual brilliance I've seen from people like Luke, even guys like Aaron Ramsey.
But what individual brilliance do you want to see?
I don't think
he should be there. So the people should be telling me.
No, but you did say that goalkeepers could be there.
Yeah.
So I'm saying like, what do you want to see from him?
For a goalkeeper to get Ballon d'Or nomination, I don't even know because
extraordinary sort of stuff. Goalkeepers know when they start training to be a goalkeeper, you're not there to be the star. You know, it's like
on a
stage.
But like, what's a star? Because you know what, at the end of the day, that's just your interpretation of what a star is. A star for me, you could be a star in any position.
I know,
we're part of a culture where that is geared towards attacking players. I understand why, but for me, there's nothing wrong with shifting that focus because for me, it's a slippery slope. It's a slippery slope because when we become so focused on one side of the game, there's a total opposite that gets ignored.
But it's been that way forever. It's been.
But just because it's been that way for me, that's
it's
not.
So it's not even a slippery slope. This is the same slope. It's the same level.
Yeah.
It's not just advocating for it.
That's your pavement.
It's a pavement.
Because it's not going to change that. It's not slippery.
It's been the same way.
But when you say it's not going to change, that's not justification for it happening.
No, I'm not saying that. It's justification.
Why can't it change? Why can't we be part of a new
because
way of thinking?
I'm not entertaining.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'm not going to. That's hipster type shit.
Yeah,
that's hipster shit. Just like
entertainment.
How is that hipster shit?
It's hipster shit. If I find attackers more entertaining, I'm not going to be saying, okay, this is slippery slope. Let me like watch goalkeepers. I don't go to YouTube to watch goalkeepers.
Okay, that's fine. As an individual, that is fine.
Yeah.
But my point is, how can you label someone a hipster? Because that's nothing. That's a derogatory way of speaking. let's be clear.
It's not that serious. I didn't label someone. I'm just saying that usually, I'm just going to say what I see. So if I sit down and I'm more drawn to attacking players, regardless of what the logic is, I'm not going to shift from that. That's what I was saying.
Okay. And my point is this, as an individual, you're entitled to that, and that's fine. But my thing is, generally speaking, it's a slippery slope to have a constant focus on attacking players because attackers are a portion of the game.
I do agree with that. Defenders should be recognized more.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's a thing where it takes an equal amount of skill or quality, you know, admittedly different qualities, but it takes an equal amount of skill to be a goalkeeper than it is to be a defender, midfielder, or an attacker. Whether it could be more technical quality or more mental quality, you know, it still has to be there. And we see it today, like, why are we always having a discussion about the apparent lack of quality world-class defenders?
Yeah.
Do you know what I say about this? It's like, we think about the England teams, and sometimes it shifts. So do you remember when England had a plethora of defenders to choose from Sol Campbell to John Terry, Rio Ferdinand, and it's just everyone. But then in terms of attackers, they didn't have it. And then when they had the goalkeepers, they were from like Gordon Banks and all of this, and then they had so many goalkeepers. But it cycles through it, and maybe it is because one World Cup final, they see amazing goalkeeper make a great save, and the young kid says, I'm going to be a goalkeeper for that. What I'm just saying is that, for me, I'm not going to change, I'm not going to do it on purpose. I'm not going to ignore what I like on purpose. And I'm just, naturally it happens, naturally it shifts. Like different national teams have different, stronger departments, and it just changes.
I understand that way of thinking, and I think
the shift is happening naturally. Even though maybe spearheaded by quote unquote hipsters, but like the way the game is changing, and you've got goalkeepers like Manuel Neuer, what Vlad has been doing for a while now, and you've got the attacking fullbacks. I think slowly but surely, defenders are slowly gaining more recognition, and that's because they are attacking more. And let's face it.
That's the point. Don't you think there's a potential issue there? Where
I don't think there's a potential issue. It's because because at the end of the day, as well as a competition, it's also entertainment. And we can't define each other what we find entertainment. Some people watch defenders and they find that completely entertaining. Like, for example, me, I like watching central midfielders, like the deep line playmakers, guys like Toni Kroos, Modric, and just seeing them play a part, to me, is entertainment. What other people may not think that's interesting for them, they just want to see some, you know, somebody do step over and stuff like that. That's what I think.
That should be. That's what I finish it. I hear that.
That's what I finish
it. I hear that and I agree with it. Like, for me, I agree with you. I don't think football should be completely about competition and about who's winning. That's me, an art to it.
We'll leave that to Man United
sports. In that sense. But when it gets to the point where the core of a certain type of player is no longer there because the shift of thinking is all towards attacking and this and that, then I just see an imbalance. I've seen an imbalance. You'll talk to coaches, literally professional coaches, and they'll tell you, like, you know, in training, teams will be focusing 90% of the time on possession and 10% on defending. And then 10 years down the line, we're like, where the defender's gone? And we're just like, well,
these things aren't
isolated. You know, the way we view football as a public, the way, because remember, these kids, you'll be coaching these kids and they're like, oh, I want to be like Hazard, I want to be like Isco, I want to be like these players, and that's fine. But I just think players need to see, or young kids or young upper players need to see a variety of different kinds of players, different kind of midfielders, different kind of attackers. You know, let's not just look at Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi, let's look at
I think Neuer is like a world. Now, you talk to most kids these days, they know Neuer. They know all the best players from a variety of positions. And if Neuer wins it, I don't really care about all of these people's opinions on who they think the best is. But if Neuer wins it, cool. But like with me, you've got to do something extraordinary as a goalkeeper to win it. That's just me.
Yeah, so I'm good to that.
All right, well, should we leave the Neuer debate there?
Yeah, yeah.
And move on to something else. All right, which one? Should we talk a bit about Mourinho's comments on FFP? I know we've covered FFP before. We did a whole podcast on it.
Leave us to FA, bro.
FA, I just want to, because you did say pre-pod.
Involved in that one, bro.
Well, why should we leave it to FA?
Leave it to FA, bro, because you'll quit the podcast if you don't back it, bro.
If I just explain why you don't think Mourinho's comments were contradictory towards Chelsea's position.
We're not able to invest the way we used to, and we can't really force the domination that we once were able to do. But now we have to do it as Kane often says, organically.
But that's like everyone else.
Not really, because United have got a wealth of finances to, you know, to dig into.
Isn't United's finances organic?
But
if Chelsea were to stop being, if they were to, you know, go a couple of seasons, you know, without trophies.
Yes.
Like, United, well, they have not a couple of seasons, but if they were to have a season like Manchester United, then we wouldn't be able to dig ourselves out of a hole like United potentially could. So that's why I say it is quite unfair. I don't think it's necessarily a protection of Chelsea, because it's up to Chelsea to maintain its success. It's not down to Roman either, because obviously it's not down to Roman anymore. Well, because we can't use his money to buy success for people, can I say.
We can.
Not the same extent. It's quite different. And it is quite different. And I do say it's a handicap simply because...
Why would you say...
Because United, Arsenal, Bayern, Barca, Real Madrid, they can all do that. No matter what, they can do it.
What can they do that Chelsea can't do?
Spend an abundance of money.
Hasn't
Chelsea's revenues like really increased a lot?
Not to the same level.
The capacity of our stadium is too small to compete. But at the same time, FFP states that Roman can spend money on infrastructure without that's come into it. So we can still increase that capacity. So at the end of the day, we're not handicapped, really. In fact, we're blessed we've got Roman Abramovich.
But that's on infrastructure and obviously, and how long will that take? Yeah, but how long will that
take to see through?
That would take a long time.
I see his point, because I do think FFP is kind of like the elitist way of climbing up a ladder and setting fire to the ladder, basically. And that's the point, like, Roman, he doesn't want anybody else coming in through the door, you know, like. Say, for example, a couple of shades come and say, Tottenham.
I don't think that's just limited to Roman Abramovich, though. I just don't think anyone wants that, you know?
So with that, you can't really have clubs being bought by these better billionaires and just pumping money in. But I do think Chelsea are fine, because Chelsea have now got a large fan base and are generating revenue. So that one, they can spend. And I think it is kind of fair in the sense that you spend what you... Let me finish. So to say that, I can't call it unfair if clubs are spending what they're earning, because if anything, people can claim, oh, but Chelsea has got a sudden influx of cash, and all of a sudden they're copying these top talents. Even though I personally think that's fine, and I do think FFP is kind of a limit on competition. But I don't think people could complain that a club like Man United or Bayern Munich or Barcelona, who have established their business over decades and decades, have got to the top, now complain, okay, they've got the power. Well, that's what happens when you run your business well for a successful period of years. So I think that's unfair to
Man. Well, let's not say business well, because it doesn't work. Like Real Madrid wasn't like that.
I don't know, man. It's all dodgy. Most people get to the top is all dodgy.
Exactly.
There's always a hint.
I can't have that for Man United.
Just because it was back in the past, you forgot about that shit.
It doesn't mean it's not. It's true. If you look at Manchester United, when I said, when they looked at Manchester United's business model, they were 10 years ahead of everybody else. But Manchester United really knew how to conduct their business with the marketing, etc. That's what gave them along with the success.
I'm sorry, but you guys had, there were so many dodgy things about Manchester United. You had people on the Premier League, people from your board on the Premier League.
David Gill.
I'm sorry. Like, you can't tell me that's not dodgy. That wouldn't happen at Chelsea.
The fact of the matter is, United
helped establish the Premier League, as in they're the ones that voted for the Premier League to happen.
One of the big five.
That is dodgy. How can you say that is not dodgy?
To be fair, the Premier League is the greatest league, like the most watched league.
Of course, that's a good thing. But it all started, of course. It's a good business move, but you can't say that it's not a hint shady.
Because it's keeping the top at the top of the same as FFP.
That's what it is. It's exactly the same thing. Before the money was spent
across the 92 teams, and they said, wait, let's get more money to just the Premier League and let's depart from the rest of the teams and let's circle it. But it's a meritocracy. The best get better. To be fair, like, you can't really respect anything where it's set up so the best get better and then the worst get worse. Obviously, they kind of redress that with parachute payments. But I think FFP is similar.
Also, when you said that thing about Chelsea, was Ken Bates not on the FA at the time he was at Chelsea?
He was business struggling with his money.
I don't think so. He wasn't.
Even if it's FA, that's not the league, Premier League. That's different.
Exactly. Completely different. So,
to be fair, you can say that about Arsenal, isn't
it? Yeah, no, exactly. David Dean was on.
Yeah.
You know. He was the chairman of...
Well, you know.
Yeah, not everything biased Chelsea, not everything...
Taking my team out of the equation
when it comes to FFP, I think first of all, what Mourinho said, if he's saying that, oh, these guys have an advantage.
He said Liverpool and Arsenal as well have an advantage over Chelsea.
I don't really see an advantage on it.
Well, what advantage?
That's
strange.
Think?
I don't think Liverpool do.
I understand Arsenal and United, but
Liverpool's advantage is you know how many fans have got in India.
They've got money, international TV rights.
Plus,
they're expanding their stadium.
They've just got permission.
International TV rights is the biggest revenue stream now for Premier League clubs. just recently it's become, and India is like, they've got so many fans in India. So maybe he's alluding to that, because obviously Mourinho, when he says stuff, he knows what he's talking about. However,
Arsenal trying to push you into that place as well, in that India.
But not compared to Liverpool. Like,
no, not compared.
Liverpool, they're dominating that. Well, Liverpool dominated that.
Why whine about it?
It's just, in my opinion, I think he does it just to take pressure off himself.
He just does it to take pressure off the players.
Is he answering
the question, or is he just talking for the sake of talking? Because if that's what I'm doing, is asking the question. He's going to ask the question.
I think it's a bit like it's not random. It's something that he's been asked, and he just puts his voice on it. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's literally it.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. I didn't want to do too much on that because, as I said, we've done a whole podcast on FFP, and we did touch on the whole elitist thing back then. I think Daniel raised a point of it. Gaining an advantage for the big teams and just cutting off the rest. Let's move on to. I noticed something today. I was looking at the Premier League table and I noticed that. Good one.
Did you think about that all by yourself?
No, that's a good one.
We're not going to debate that. I did notice that out of the 10 bottom clubs in the Premier League in the table, 8 of those clubs are managed by British managers, and out of the 10 top clubs in the Premier League, only 2 have British managers. I just wanted to ask the question whether there is a coincidence there, or maybe it's just, you know, 13 games into the season. I'm sure that will change around.
I think it's just... It's
Ollie, normal. Do you want to have a go?
Yeah, I think it's normal, because I don't really... There's not many good British managers, is there? Like, the quality they've got is not really great. They don't really go elsewhere to learn what they normally do. It's just stick to what they know.
Hmm.
Maybe the biggest clubs are less likely to take a chance on British managers after Moyes fucked up the whole situation. Maybe he fucked that whole path up for his British managers.
But then I don't really see too many British managers out there that big clubs would actually take. Like, you know, there's not many that reputable British managers out there that, like, if Arsenal wanted a manager tomorrow, they're not going to go for any of the British lot, are they?
But the links with Paul Clement.
They might get Kurbishley. But then again, that is a contradictory, because he's actually travelled.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah.
So it's different.
Other than him, and he's not a manager. Has he managed before? I don't think he's managed before, has he?
He's just a coach.
Then again,
we can argue that some teams don't need managers. Some teams just need first team coaches. So,
yeah, true.
Arsenal need a manager.
I'll
tell you that now.
Yeah.
So why is it, do you think, that Britain aren't producing the best managers? I mean, you've mentioned the fact that, you know, they don't tend to travel the world and learn the game.
I think you know what it is. I think you'll see the brand new generation of English managers are going to be the ones that really take
people like Eddie Howe.
When did they come through?
I think all these current ones, they're all from like the old school. And the old school, you know, it has its merits. Some of the traditional ways of coaching, you know, still have use today. I'm not totally dismissing them, but I just think that for the modern game, it's just not enough to really excel. On top of that, you know, we're an increasingly metropolitan league, which requires an increasing amount of, you know, experience of cultures and languages from, you know, abroad. And you know, the current profile of the managers in the top level, it doesn't fit. So, you know, for me, I would like to see someone from Paul Clement's background go on, obviously get more and more experience and go on and then eventually start you know, occupying the top jobs in the British in the British game. He's pretty young, so he's like early 40s.
Yeah.
But
when you
said
the new coach, the new generation of coaches, when do we start seeing these guys?
For like 10 to 15 years, in my opinion.
But I think you're seeing a few more coming through, because I was listening to something the other day. I think it's Brentford's manager, Mark Warburton. He took over from Uwe Rösler, and he's like, he said to his wife, give me 10 years, I've got money in the bank, let me become a football manager. And he was working in football.
Oh, okay.
But he didn't have any like coaching experience or anything like that.
He was a kit man for Brentford.
I think it was Watford.
Yeah, one of them.
He was working for their youth development program or something like that.
He's already in the system, because you know football's very incestuous.
But I think it was like just for the schools, like community stuff and whatnot.
He didn't come from like an actual footballer's background.
No. So he said to his wife, "We've got money in the bank. Give me 10 years. Let me become like a football manager." So he travelled the world, went and watched like Barcelona and got mentored by them. And he's come back now. He was doing a bit of coaching at Brentford, and when Uwe Rösler moved to Wigan, he got the job permanently. And
What's his name, sorry?
Mark Warburton.
Sick.
So
yeah, that's the type of stuff that needs to happen.
Go and get it yourself. Everyone wants the shit to come to them. This guy went to go and get it.
But I think the key thing in that, though, is the fact that, as I said, he did have money in the bank. And I don't think we have to appreciate how expensive this sort of stuff is. And in this country,
I think it's not even the monetary aspect. I think it's more the time aspect.
Time and money, though.
From a non-playing background, the support system that you're going to have, like, his wife, she's, like, the real MVP. Because especially at his age, I would assume as well to be like, yo, listen, quit my job. And I'm going to go do this. You know, as someone with a family, that is very, very hard. So, you know, more so talking about the football, I think, you know, we're very complacent in a lot of ways. In terms of, we have such a great infrastructure, but we rely on, I'm not going to say incest, but we rely on, you know, nepotism, and we rely on the old boys network to get ahead, as opposed to really learning the game. And you know, like, the people that actually hire these managers, they're not footballmen in the pure sense of the word. They're not guys that know more than the coaches. These are guys that just want the best for the club, and guys that, you know, even for vanity reasons, they want, you know, my club to play this type of football. I want us to win this cup or this, that, and that. But they can sense when a coach knows what the fuck he's talking about, when a coach is literally living and breathing football. And I do think that regardless of your background, British or foreign, these owners, if they can sense that in a prospective manager, that manager has a chance, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I've been amongst coaches at the highest level of the game. And whilst they still have quite a lot of knowledge and insight, for me as a prospective coach, there's still little things that they say that I'm like generally baffled at. Like, really? Like, is that what you really believe? And these are guys at the top end of the game. So you could put that down to like a difference of opinion, but like when you see a certain pattern and consistency in some of these top coaches, and you're like, really, like, how did you get to this conclusion? Mm. So obviously they're on the field. You know, I can't use my analysis of Sky Sports and BT Sport and, you know, YouTube and all of these things, or, you know, the odd live game here and there, compared to their being day in, day out on the training field. They do have an insight that we're not privy to. However, there's enough of a gap, a discrepancy, to say that, you know what, I'm not too sure if you're there with that opinion.
Mickey, I think you have a fair point there, because, like, I know you talk about just, like, speaking to these coaches, like, day in, day out and stuff, but even when I listen to an interview, like a post-match interview, and I listen to, like, Harry Redknapp, I just think this guy's so out of touch.
He seems like an idiot.
Do you know what? Fair.
I know that's probably not fair, but...
shows up, we kind of have this idea that this is the way we do things, and
really going to change, type of thing. Whereas maybe other cultures are always, okay, what's a new way of thinking? You know, always innovative and stuff like that. So I think that's why you see maybe the managers in our league, for example, they kind of, apart from Brendan, I'll say Brendan Rodgers is quite, you know, quite different.
He's young. Like,
he's way too young. They're still kind of the old school of thought, and they don't, you know, really kind of move on with the times. If you don't move on with the times, you're going to move behind. So
could,
no matter where you are, even if you're at the top, that's what you
see. What we'll say to that is that it is difficult balance, because you do still have to have your core principles, whether it's your coaching philosophy, your football philosophy.
Could the influx of like foreign owners aid this? Because obviously we're talking about like keeping it in house, like in terms of culture. Obviously we've seen a lot of influx of foreign owners. Liverpool employed Brendan Rodgers. They've got American owners. Could that have any benefit towards this in terms of getting young British coaches the jobs?
I will say, in a sense, the one advantage of that would be you can. It's almost like, you know, everyone's on a level playing field when it comes to applying for a job, in a sense.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It's like, okay, there's no, you know, it's like, okay, impress me. You're going to have to impress me the same way this German coach has impressed me, the same way this Portuguese coach has impressed me.
Yeah.
You're going to have to impress me. I think another one of the advantages is that it challenges you to raise your game. You know, it's like, put in the work. Don't rely on the fact that, you know, I used to play with your uncle. Put in the work.
Yeah.
You know? So, I personally, overall, I don't see it as a bad thing. I think the one negative thing of that is that the great thing about football is the cultural aspect to it. And for me, the best teams, on a consistent basis, it ties in with the culture of the league that they're playing on, or the country that they're playing in. Real Madrid and Barcelona, there's a Catalonian and a Spanish identity. Bayern Munich, there's a German identity. Manchester United, Liverpool, Manchester United primarily, there's an English identity to it. And I think with the influx of foreign managers, you move away from that. There's a bigger risk of moving away from that. And, you know, I think it's just about up to the individual in terms of navigating. I go back to what I was saying before. I just think it's going to be quite a while. It usually takes about 10 years anyway. For you to see like a real change.
Do you think we're going to see?
When it comes, it's really going to surprise to coaches. It won't be a surprise when you see all of these British coaches coming out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It won't be a surprise at all.
Yeah.
Because trust me, they're coming.
Do you?
The general football. Sorry.
Mickey,
Mickey,
do you think that now we're going to see like less former players become managers, and more of the coaches are going to actually be, you know. Built as coaches from, say, their late 20s, early 30s, as opposed to coming through the game.
Yeah. Personally speaking, I think that could happen, but I think what may happen is not necessarily a bad thing, because you may see former players taking coaching more seriously and feeling less entitled. Mm. Because they're going to see, wow, okay, this guy that never kicked a ball once in a professional game knows more than me. Mm. And I played
like Jose Mourinho.
Not just Jose, look at the Pellegrini, Wenger.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they were players, but they were just
footballers. I'm not talking about the top, like, if you're looking at a top right now, they're not players that were top players.
Yeah, I think we're seeing a trend now, aren't we?
Exactly, so maybe they're rewarding people that are actually the best coaches. And hopefully that trend continues.
Yeah, because obviously as a footballer, you miss out on, like, quite a few years of development as a coach, don't you? Because you don't get that. I know Ryan Giggs said he was doing his coaching badges from whatever age, like 35 or whatever. But he still had to focus full time on his playing. So you just wonder how much work he actually put in.
Yeah, it's just about navigating your time. The possibility, if you were an ex-player, I think if you were a Guardiola, for example, then it's the best of both worlds. So hopefully you would see a bit more of that too, like players that literally take it crazy serious and like, you know, I am a coach, I'm starting from scratch.
But you know what? It's like I don't think it's the seriousness that is the difference between Guardiola and other people. There are players that are top players that were completely serious and failed. I don't think it's the seriousness. I think at Barcelona, you're in a place that is entrenched with a philosophy where every little thing is drummed into you. So I think with Barcelona, they're okay to like get their Luis Enriquez and Guardiola's through, because it's a whole philosophy that everybody learns. Whereas if you come from an English club where all of these little rules aren't there, then you just come out and you've had that player perspective for like 10 years, and all of a sudden it's a completely different new perspective. You go into a change room, you have to pick everyone up. I'm sure captains, they've got like, that's probably why you see Terry's thinking, oh, he might be a good coach, because on that emotional side of the game he might have that, but on the tactical side of the game, all he had to worry about was being defender. You don't have to worry about organising an attack, etc.
The only reason for me at the end of the day is with the thing with Barcelona and just clubs in general, where there is an identity that is just drummed into you from 6 to 36, is the fact that it gives you a base. So when you go into coaching, there's less time spent figuring out what your own personal philosophy is.
Yeah.
If you were raised in Barcelona, you know how you're going to be as a coach.
Yeah, that's the one thing you take.
No, but I think what really separates Guardiola, because at the end of the day, Guardiola isn't the first player or first coach to stress, a proactive game, a game based on positional play and high intensity. He's not the first. Do you know what I mean? What separates Guardiola is an insane work ethic and a great humility. And when I'm talking about a great humility, it's the fact that he doesn't coach as if he was a legendary player. He doesn't rely on him, on his stature in the game. He relies on work ethic and connecting with players and all the great stuff. And I think that, if you look at guys like Clarence Seedorf had that kind of background whilst he was at Ajax. So did Frank Rijkaard. Obviously Frank Rijkaard was successful, not obviously to the extent of, Guardiola and so on, but there's been examples
but the
of
difference,
great
the difference is
legendary
that, like,
players with no, but like the thing, even Cruyff.
Yeah, but
Cruyff had the players.
All I'm saying is like this: Guardiola raised in the Barcelona philosophy. Obviously, he went out as well because he's always sought to this. He went out to Italy because obviously he knew that they're tactical there. So this is a guy already preparing to be a manager during his playing career. So he took it seriously, like you're saying. So that is something that he did kind of separate him. But he goes back to Barcelona where he knows this complete philosophy. So it's not like, again, he has to kind of brush up on everything. He becomes a manager of already one of the best teams in the world. So it's a comfortable situation. And obviously, I'm not trying to stump a little Guardiola, but I'm just saying, take that into an English manager's point of view. Coming through our English club without all of those rules, and then he can be serious, he can be passionate and all that. Like, I'm sure Sherwood, he has those same kind of... Like, he wanted to be one of the boys. He showed that kind of same passion and that same attitude to learning. But it's not as easy for him.
Probably
he's not one of the biggest
player.
That's what I'm trying to say.
You showed as an example, personally speaking.
Why not?
I'm just saying that.
He had that passion.
I don't think it's... I'm not talking about passion. I'm just talking about humility and work ethic.
Well...
Like, the reason a lot of people actually say, do you know what, I don't know if I would want Pep Guardiola to take it in my team, is actually because of his work ethic and the intensity that he coaches at.
Well, AVB's got that.
Sorry?
AVB's got that work ethic too.
Yeah, but like, he has that work ethic, but does he have the knowledge of Pep Guardiola? Does he connect to players that Pep Guardiola does? My thing is, the only thing I'm saying is that, yes, coming from a playing background gives you an advantage. However, there's been players that have gone on to be coaches with a similar education. Do you know what I mean? However, because they've lacked certain other ingredients that I think more high-profile players going into retirement should retain, that's why they've not been as successful as someone like a Pep Guardiola has. Like, Pep Guardiola is what you would want from someone like Ryan Giggs. I think we had the talk when we talked about should Ryan Giggs take over from, David Moyes when he had the brief stint as Man United manager. It's like, you want them to have this thing where I'm starting from scratch. Let me go back to my playing history to call on certain scenarios. So when I'm, talking to a player and he's injured for X amount of time, they're like, I remember when I was 26 and I was injured during a crucial period of the season. That's when you use your playing history to better your management. However, apart from that, you are a coach, you start from scratch. And I don't think enough high-profile players that want to go on to manage, they do that enough.
But I wanna. Can we argue that Giggs may not have known he wanted to be a coach? You know, because I don't. I'm not sure if he. It was something he really wanted to do from a young age. In my opinion, I think he's just, you know, because he's the last real link between Fergie and the club. That's why he's done it. I don't think it's necessarily a passion. And I don't think that he's gone and tried to study the game like Guardiola has. So I don't think, maybe in hindsight, I was saying that he was a good choice because he knows the club, but looking back, I don't think that he's actually done the groundwork, if you know what I mean.
I mean, that's, I didn't bring up Ryan Giggs to talk about him solely. I just used him. I could use other examples. Clarence Seedorf. I could use a whole host of coaches that have had ambitions to coach, but for them, it's more about I'm a player and it's a natural progression to go on and coach, as opposed to really understanding that, you know, half of the equation isn't just about football. It's just like, you know, for me, someone like Jose Mourinho, all he would have to do is invest a little bit of time in learning another sport, and he could be equally as successful in rugby and basketball, and, you know, because, you know, that's why I said it's very important to separate coaching philosophy and playing philosophy. Coaching philosophy is transferable to any sport or any walk of life. Alex Ferguson could have run a Fortune 500 company. Do you know what I mean? Because things that are separate from football. However, where a high-profile footballer has an advantage is the fact that he can call upon those experience and he has the stature to, you know, influence players. Because you can't take that away from Guardiola. It's a big advantage that he had. Of course, he can talk to a Messi or to a Xavi or Iniesta and be like, yo, you know, do this. Because these guys, you know, they've won international titles without him. They've won Champions League and domestic titles before. They've won it. Apart from the World Cup, they've done it all already. So there is an advantage to being a high-profile player, but I just think that there's not been enough evidence of ex-players really, I don't know if taking it seriously is the right way to articulate it, but really start from scratch in terms of the coaching aspect and really take that fully on board.
Yeah. All right. I think we should probably move on to some listeners' questions because I know we've got a lot and... we're running out of time. So does anyone have any like favourites they want to choose? Anyone off the top of their head? Or do I need to go on the Twitter and find them?
Can we talk about English? I've got a question from CFC O'Brien, Tommy O'Brien.
Yep.
And he asked, what is everyone's thoughts on what the English DNA should be and their thoughts on, how should England produce players and what kind of players should they produce?
FA released a report today as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's where it came from. That's where it came from.
I think in the last like 10 years since I've been watching football, the general consensus kind of seems like we have the way we our Premiership tempo, the way we play, but we're kind of halfway thinking, but in the concept is how they play, so we're gonna need to, you know, adapt to that, and we're kind of getting a halfway house where we're not fully, you know, going with the continental style of playing or going with our style of playing, kind of like halfway in between, and it's really, really, I think it's really frustrating. I think our DNA is when we play to our strength. We tend to develop quite a lot of quick, direct footballers. Defenders are very, very good in the air, robust in challenges. Midfielders have a lot of energy, they like to carry the ball and attack. I think we should kind of have a DNA of attacking and direct football. I don't think we should. I think I'll discuss this during the summer in the World Cup pods. I don't think we should, you know, say, okay, everyone seems to want to go 4-5-1 or 4-3-3 or whatever, and let's set 4-3-1. We shouldn't. Why should we front them? A lot of our teams play historically have played 2-front. That's what a lot of our players have grown up used to, or having 2 aggressive wingers, or having even our quote unquote number 10s. Tend to be attacking forwards who just like to drive at defenders like Bark and like Raheem Sterling or Wayne Rooney if he plays there, or Oxlade-Chamberlain if he plays there, or Jack Walsh if he plays there. So I think our DNA should focus on playing to our strengths and trying to fine-tune a way of playing our high-tempo attacking football but still have tactical discipline. That's what I think we should focus on.
Anyone else?
country's football identity has to be a reflection of the country's culture to an extent. So I think we're a culture that is multicultural. So for me, we should be adaptable, we should be flexible in terms of our DNA. I also believe that a lot of the time when we're talking about it, we tend to talk about positions and formations. I think it's more about focusing on a general philosophy and general principles, because formations, you know, formations are never static. You can say I'm playing a 4-5-1, but during a period of game it could be a 3-4-3. So on top of that, I think we produce a mix of direct players and a mix of more patient, more cerebral players. So I think we should find a way to accommodate those two styles. And I think the only way you really achieve that is by producing intelligent players. I think we should focus on intelligent football, football that is about decision making and changing and adapting when necessary. So I think we've always been able to produce fast players. I think we've always been able to produce mentally strong players. I think we've always been able to produce enough technically competent players. I think where our main problem has been is producing intelligent players.
I disagree.
Makers.
I disagree. I think we do produce them. I just think our game, the way we don't really facilitate them into our game, so they get overlooked. Players that, for example, I use Josh McCaffrey. I can't even say his name properly. He's a player who I think is a very, very intelligent football player, but he doesn't seem to be given opportunity or given a lineup. We have guys like Michael Carrick.
That's because of the. Isn't that because of the current culture? Every team is so focused on getting the points rather than thinking of how good that player is and giving them a chance.
Yeah, but how come guys like. It's not even shape, no, actually, it's better, so I know if that is shape. How come guys like Henderson and Cleverley, these guys get a chance?
That's what I mean.
I'm not saying that we don't produce.
I think we produce enough
McEachrans as such. But my thing is, are they the exception or are they the rule?
There's a lot of them.
Even going through time, like now we've got Kev, for example, there's
Lewis Baker.
There's Cork coming through. Before we've had Michael Carrick. Even guys like Danny Murphy, he was a very intelligent footballer, and I think he was a very, very good footballer. These are the type of players that, you know, because of the way we play, they kind of get overlooked. Even for example, Joe Cole. I think Joe Cole was an unbelievably talented footballer, but we kind of shoved him out of the left wing because we kind of didn't know what to do with somebody like that. I think that's the main problem. That we do produce intelligent footballers, they just don't get what's it called. I think the opportunity is showcased. Yeah, misused. Okay. So it's basically just what's it called, not a good allocation of resources. And that's always been the case of England.
I think seeing, like, judging from what I've seen in terms of just coaching practice on a small scale and on a larger scale, I think a lot of it is lacking the decision makers in terms of the bigger sense, in terms of how we produce players. I still don't think there's enough of the modern player, and, you know, the player that is able to not just play a lot of positions but to play equally as well in every one of those positions, you know. He's been able to play a lot of positions since he was young, but was he equally adept in each one of those positions? Was he just as good as a box-to-box midfielder when he was 20, then as a defensive midfielder and as an attacking midfielder? For me, the main thing about what I would like to see in an English DNA is just universal players, modern players, players that in any situation can adapt and still be equally as good as they were in their preferred positions.
Yeah.
Can I say a little something?
Go on, Daniel.
First and foremost, I think it's important to establish an English DNA just because over the years, things become in vogue. Do you remember the time when everything was Barcelona? And if you think about the English game and what I've seen, like, in European matches, because obviously European football, you see clashes of cultures. I've always loved how you go and see Arsenal play Inter Milan and how Inter Milan can't handle their intensity. Pow, pow, pow. They took them over. Liverpool went to Real Madrid, their intensity, they couldn't handle it. But it comes out odd, though, because when a new vogue thing comes, like Barcelona, who play a more, not 100 miles per hour game, and they slow it down, then they're always thinking, okay, maybe let's copy them. But what happens is you're sacrificing actually what you're good at and what you can bring.
Exactly.
So bringing in
that's
Spanish
what I was
DNA.
Bring up.
Exactly. My bad. What? You know,
I was going to say, like, England realistically shouldn't be begging, like, trying to be like Belgium or Germany.
Well, to
be
fair, in the article, I read the article and they said they don't want to become Belgium or steal from Belgium or Germany, but they just want to set an English DNA. So it seems like they've got that message. Apart from that, I just want to quickly mention, I think it was the latest England friendly, I saw a picture of the England team celebrating and it looked like a United Colours of Benetton. You guys know that,
yeah.
That advert, there were mixed race players there, there were black players there were white players there. Let's include our Punjabi brothers and sisters and let's get everyone in the fucking thing, man, because
you
I think
Yonder,
like
isn't it?
Huh? Exactly.
Shout out to Aaron, by the way. Aaron, we see you.
That's what I'm saying. You're not gonna fuck with me. So Kane said, multicultural, let's embrace that. So I want to see that as part of the English DNA as well. That's what I'm saying.
Alright, fair enough. Sorry, let's just quickly breeze through these questions because we've got shitloads. Alright, let's get one from Addy Don Swagger. He's a regular listener of ours. So, do you guys think the race for fourth has been the most exciting than the title race this year? Well, it's only 13 games, but.
Yeah, it's crap. Everyone's getting smacked every week, so it's not very interesting.
It hasn't started yet.
Yeah,
to be honest.
No. But I do want to see the same because it seems like anybody could make like it's because I think there's like two. I think Arsenal are seven or something. They're only 2 points behind the people above them or something like that. So
that's what I'm saying. They haven't spread out yet. Shit hasn't gone wrong yet. The race.
Southampton have already fallen off, haven't they? FA.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
Are they still more certain than Arsenal to finish in the Champions League?
Why not? They're in a better position.
So are they more certain?
Why not?
Why not?
It's a good question. Why? Arsenal have been in this position for like how many years? What tends to happen?
Okay. But what does that mean?
Why are we not acknowledging that?
Okay. Do you want to hear this? This is the funniest thing. United have been top many times in the past. What means that? What separates their season last season?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It doesn't matter. It does not matter. I can tell everyone happily that if a team looks better than one team, then I could say happily that they look more likely.
But you didn't say likely, you said more certain. To be honest, we hear this argument every year when it comes to Arsenal and Tottenham. So,
okay, but Arsenal and Tottenham.
No. It's
going on.
Who's actually facing this top four? Can we name them?
Huh?
Who's racing for top four then?
Arsenal, United, Chelsea, and City. That's going to be the top four.
It's December, man.
That's your opinion.
My qualm with it all, yeah, was the fact that you said Southampton are more certain, not more likely. You said they're more certain.
Lewis, don't be a
girl.
Get the tweet out.
What did I do?
Because this is
I disagree with me, yeah.
I don't think Southampton will touch
one that I don't think, from what I've seen in football, in terms of quality of players, I don't think it's a good shout to say that Southampton will have a better chance of getting into top four. But I don't think you could dismiss if there's
positive. But no one's dismissing it.
No, I just don't understand the basis of it.
No, hold on. You're saying no. First, again, that's
people
what I said.
Are
that's
but you
that's
are
again, hold
are
on. That's why I asked
the thing.
You said, okay, hold on. Wait for a second. We've asked you the question. You said, why not? We've presented the why not. We've presented the counter argument, which have been examples
said,
to say, okay,
before,
do you know? Hold on.
And
hold
I said
on.
Before, no, you said, I'm
not finished. You can't say because I'm not finished.
Honestly,
you said they were more certain than Liverpool.
You said they were more certain than Arsenal and Liverpool to get it. So we said, you know what?
I agree with Liverpool.
We don't believe that to be the case because you know what? Tottenham have been in that position.
Okay.
Aston Villa have been in that position.
Okay.
Everton have been in that position.
Okay.
So there's reasons to suggest that, hold on, Arsenal have an experience when it comes to critical period in the season. And there's repeated evidence of this to say, do you know what? Hey,
no,
even though in
seasons
are
different
hold on,
season,
hold on.
Oh,
even
days.
Though in November, we're in November, by the way.
Okay, December.
Southampton
okay,
got X amount of points over Arsenal. Do you know what?
Okay.
Throughout the season.
Don't play to me.
No, but I think if his comments came in November, I think that's what Mick is alluding to.
In November, when it was the international.
Can I have a point there?
Continue.
What I said was. Is at the end of the day, experience counts for something. It may not be the defining factor. It may
it
not
does.
Be the defining factor. It's not an absolute.
That's what you guys are relying on, though. That's what. This is where you lot are talking.
When you said
about.
Rely,
what,
no one said
this
rely.
What, this is what Lewis is
you
saying.
Said,
I said
that.
This doesn't make any sense. My point is.
What's
me? I'm not looking at other seasons. I'm looking at this season and how they are playing. And exactly,
okay.
14-15, Southampton are playing better than you guys. And
wow.
I look more assured as a team. Simple.
Okay.
Simple.
All right.
So if you're
okay,
going to
so
for other seasons, I don't
that's another play to me.
No. If
that
means
nothing to me.
Seriously. Southampton next eight fixtures, seven fixtures,
yeah.
I think it's United twice,
yeah.
Everton, Spurs, and Arsenal, innit? So I think,
sure.
I think it's good to have this debate after those games, I think.
And what did I say?
I think it's a bit premature to dismiss the possibility of, you know, even I personally don't see, because I personally think Southampton probably get peppered in a few of those games coming up. That's just my personal opinion.
Can I say something? Ayo, sorry.
Yeah.
Yes, in fact, okay. So, at a certain point in the season, November, it's been suggested that even though we're not looking at history, going by this season, Southampton looking more likely to get top four.
No, that's not my point.
That's really, yeah, no, that's not your point. I'm saying, but I'm talking off something else that you said, right? However, rewind the season ago, Arsenal were playing better than Liverpool for, we could say, half of the season.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So at that point, we could have said, Arsenal more likely to win the title than Liverpool.
Yeah.
Yes.
However, there was a lot of shouts to say, well, Arsenal haven't played this team. So
yes.
Until they get to that point, and obviously the whole February March breakdown, which is again going back to the historical evidence. Up until that point, we can't count them as certain or genuine title contenders because we've got to play this team, and they usually break down. So I'm just trying to figure out where's the consistency in the logic behind predicting how a team will fare, because on one hand we're saying, okay.
First of all,
this team.
I need to interrupt.
Okay.
Because first and foremost, I said at this moment in time they look more certain than Arsenal do. Second of all, I said we will revisit this in December by the time Southampton have played Arsenal, United, blah 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 blah. And that's what I said. So if we're going to continue, then it makes no sense to continue until those games happen.
That's fair enough. If he's explained himself, that's fine.
Yeah, I've explained myself.
I don't need to repeat what I've said.
But Kane, what was your point in a nutshell again? Sorry.
My thing is, it's just
this inconsistency. It's not inconsistent because I've maintained the same thing I said last season. I've maintained the same thing.
Arsenal played well,
and I've maintained that they.
But essentially,
that
means that your point contradicts.
Yeah,
I don't know.
No,
hold on, but
that's
Kane. Can you just sum up? Sum up.
my thing is, you're contradicting yourself. I can't say something is certain to happen, but we'll see.
Did you say that?
I'm certain to die. I'm certain to die at death, but we'll see.
They look more certain. I said at this moment in time, Southampton look more certain than Arsenal do. And then I said,
if something is certain, hold on, from my understanding, look more certain.
What does that mean? What does look more certain than certain?
Let me say something. In my interpretation of that term certain, then there's no we'll see about it.
Oh, wow.
Certain means it's going to happen.
Oh, but wow. This is semantics.
Looks more certain at this moment, but this is semantics now.
There's no point in debating the semantics of it. Well, how it is right now, Ife, you're saying December you'll make a decision on whether you think or not Southampton will make top four. So we'll have Chris and meets back on the same pod, and we most certainly will.
Yeah, that's fine. And Lewis has to,
I'll add my 2 pence in. I won't forget.
No, I really want. And if Southampton do get top four, you do not.
Yeah.
Because I really don't care. We'll win the title or something.
Woo!
But if you guys
don't put it out there, don't put it out there.
You guys.
That is an impressive sound clip. That is. That sound clip is going to might haunt you, mate.
I think we need to do forfeits.
What sort of forfeits are we talking about?
Let's chop it up and let's discuss it.
So if Arsenal don't finish top four?
So if Chelsea don't win the title,
but you're crazy, Dan. I have no point. If I said Arsenal are going to get top four ahead of Southampton, I've just said that I don't understand the.
But they will.
Except of saying something is.
There we go.
Yeah, see, Lewis has just said it. Lewis has just said it.
That's what I'm saying.
He's not sitting on the fence. He's actually making a strong opinion. Meads, you're saying, what's your strong opinion? Chelsea going to win the title.
Chelsea.
That's not a strong opinion, man. That's dead on certain, mate.
No, it's not, man.
It is.
Title's
done.
Definitely not certain.
Title's done, mate. Chelsea are going
to
go unbeaten as well.
No,
they're
not.
I didn't say that.
He's trying to jinx it.
No one said that. That's what you're saying.
Nobody cares about you guys, man.
Nobody cares. Chelsea fans do not actually care. We don't care about being unbeaten.
Yes, you do.
We care more about trolling you guys.
No. Listen, people are going to remember the Invincible season longer than your title season. So you're going to go unbeaten in the Champions League? But if it hadn't been done before...
Do you know what else I'd prefer? I'd prefer if Chelsea went unbeaten in all competitions. I don't care about...
Exactly, because it's set a new record. It's going to uncharted territory.
I want something new. We don't care about repeating. Because drawing 10 times...
I hope you get bloody Barcelona next. I really do. Yeah, I don't care.
Who's got the record?
Who's got the record?
It's Arsenal in 2007.
That's great. search of a league as opposed to going over a period of time.
I don't know.
You can compare the achievements. At the end of the day, you can't take anything away from an Arsenal team that won 10
games.
Of course you are, because when you're saying they drew 10 games and it's bullshit, you're saying it's bullshit and you're not giving any credit to it. You're taking away from the achievement.
Yeah, we are.
Okay, I genuinely don't care about the record. If we do it, then brilliant. I'll be able to troll Arsenal fans fun. That'd be brilliant. But I don't care. Genuinely, I don't. I'd rather get the title.
I can hear sincerity, Wes.
I can hear sincerity,
but for me, that's fine. But my point is, it's very hard to say to someone, I don't care about this. But yet, that's the catalyst for you to go and troll Arsenal fans.
No, you're missing the point.
That's not the behaviour or the mindset.
If we did it, no. Let's understand this. I'm going to be quite clear. If we did it, then brilliant. I can troll, fun, whatever. If we didn't, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me.
But if you don't care, that would mean that you lost the game. I would love that.
Explain it to it. Get in the same situation. However, hold on. Someone says they don't care, there's not even a mention of it happening. It's like, oh shit, okay, it happened, cool.
Okay,
hold on. To troll someone, hey, let me be a level of
pain. Oh my god.
Wait,
wow.
Okay,
you are so far.
Hey, King, I'm listening. I'm all ears, mate.
Give it up, give it up last. And I quote, this is Arsenal fans when it comes to cuts. It's only a FA Cup. I don't care. When you won it, were you not trolling the head out of everybody else in Arsenal?
But that's some Arsenal fans. That's not like.
Okay.
No, but you have to be consistent. You can't say, oh, some Arsenal fans were saying this, but then some Arsenal fans were doing that. That's bullshit. Did Mickey do that, and did Mickey troll? If the answer is yes, then you can say that. If the answer is no, then that's a bullshit point.
No, because we're talking about the relation to fans. Loads of Arsenal fans say, and I'm even.
But then.
Arsenal fans in general. Just so I'm clear. You're talking about Arsenal fans in general.
Arsenal fans in general. Yeah, I'm not talking about Kane, because I'll say his name.
Okay.
But like,
okay, cool.
Arsenal fans in general,
they always hypocrisy. Because throughout the campaign, up until about the quarters. There's a lot of talk about us, only the FA Cup, or it's only this, it's only that. And when we won it, we just saw the reaction and then you saw the parades and all that type of shit. Parade. So amongst a lot of Arsenal fans, there was a level of hypocrisy that I do acknowledge.
Even in the pod, I asked everybody, set your priorities. I think it was the pod or in the group chat. What's it called? FA Cup, League Cup, Champions League. You all said Champions League first and foremost, that you don't care about FA Cup. Am I lying?
Yeah, but who? But of course, the answer is going to be yes. That.
Never would have said that.
Lewis,
what?
Bring up the bit over the FA Cup, though.
What?
Sorry.
They put the League Cup over the FA Cup. What they want?
No, no. I said, what do you care about? Qualifying, getting fourth place, or the FA Cup, and everyone said, "Oh, fourth place, don't give a damn about the FA Cup."
Oh yeah, yeah, no.
But yeah, but that.
True.
That makes sense, though.
Hold on. That's a different thing. That's a different thing because that's talking about priorities. Hold on.
We'll have to find that clip. I'll try and find that clip. But.
I remember Wenger saying that he doesn't care about FA Cup.
Well, I might have been group chat.
When did Wenger say that?
Wenger did. I remember that he said.
We have to find that clip. We have to find that clip.
Yeah, I'll try and send it.
Wenger did say something along those lines. If you have to talk about the other.
He said he prioritised the FA Cup. He doesn't rate the domestic cups. This was about 4 years.
He said that he said he would rather qualify the Champions League over it. That's where the whole fourth place trophy thing comes from. Let me just, okay, so are we really trying to merge the two scenarios together
in terms of Chelsea winning the Champions League and knocking whoever out of blah blah. I will tell you for free, we did not give a shit about who finished fourth. We did not care. We did not even give a shit. We were in the final and we were looking to win the title. We didn't care. Honestly, that's what I'm saying. It was a subsequence of us winning it that made it special. We did not actually care at that moment in time. We were too busy watching Drogba score a header. Do you understand?
Okay, cuff yourself. Enjoy some green tea. Enjoy that win. What you can't do, because we're getting away from the whole debate, right? What you can't do is to claim nonchalance about something, yet still react when it happens.
Oh my word.
If that's what you're talking about, that's what you're talking about.
Guys, we're going around in circles. Guys, we're going around in circles. Guys, we're going around in circles. Let's leave it there. Okay, we're going to have to do like... I give it to Mickey. I'm the host, so my opinion matters more. Anyway, I've got one for Mickey, actually. Like, it's especially for you, yeah? It's from Composed H, who... I'm not a big fan of right now because he tried to slander me on Twitter the other day. But he asked, why do you not regard Rooney as world-class, even though he is...
Oh, thank you. Compose H, thank you. Okay, look, let's get it in.
Even though he is touching his records for club and country.
Yes.
Make it brief, though, because we haven't got long.
We'll make it brief. At the end of the day, let's talk about who's world-class, right? If we talk about who's world-class... When we say Rooney's name alongside those guys, does it stick?
Nope.
Does it stick?
No.
My thing is, personally speaking,
who are the guys before you say does it stick? No, you're not saying these names, bro.
Do you know what? I try not to talk about the likes of Messi and Ronaldo because these guys are just demons. It's an unfair standard. But when I talk about world-class guys, I'm thinking about guys like Modric. I'm talking about guys like Schweinsteiger. I'm talking about guys like Luis Suarez.
Aguero.
These are world-class players. These are players that have done it before, world-class, and are doing it now, world-class. Did you not see what Schweinsteiger was doing in the World Cup?
How many games did he play?
He played 3 games, and he did it at the most critical time.
Cool. It's funny, but at the same time, I completely agree with what Kane's saying.
My thing is, right, even at Rooney's peak, what do you consider to Rooney's to be his best season or his best period, if we're talking about like 2 or 3 seasons? His best period.
I think the latter decade, when he changed his shot to number 10. Especially
what season was that, if you just
remember the years. I just remember after winning all the time, so I can't really remember. But it was like, from the early, I think, the first season when Ronaldo first turned up, the Busby Bates t-shirt that season.
2006.
Yeah.
2006, 2007.
When you reclaimed the title of Chelsea, that was it.
Yeah, and then I think it probably ended, you know, the season when you played up front, lone striker.
2009, 2010.
Yeah.
Listen, right. Okay.
Okay. My thing is this, right? Firstly, during that period, would you feel comfortable, and I'm posing this question to everyone on the pod, right? I'm just gonna ask Ayo, would you feel comfortable calling them an out and out world class player at the time?
Yes.
Guys, what do you think?
Okay. Well, for me personally, I see things a bit differently. In terms of calling a player world class, you have to have a sustained high level performance, high. And the thing is with Rooney, although he's been a great player and he's had great seasons, he's never been a consistently high performing footballer over a course of a period of time. So I can't call him world class. Although he's had not necessarily world class seasons, he's had top class seasons, but he's never done it consistently. So it's never been, okay, so 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, boom, Rooney. It's never been that. It's always been, he's fucked up again, or, it's never been a consistency with Rooney. That's my issue, and that's why I can't really give him.
Even when Man United won those three.
He wasn't.
Because that's the period. Yeah, because thank you for bringing up that point. Because I'm not gonna approach this purely on Rooney. There's no argument to suggest Rooney's world class. Let me be clear to you guys on the pod and anyone who's gonna listen to this, right? When I say Rooney isn't world class, or any player, right, it isn't to dismiss the argument that he is, because there is an argument to say that he is world class to an extent. I just think the reasons against that point outweigh those. So if we even talked back to that period, right, let's be reasonable and say the period from 2006 or 2007 close, I'll say 2007 more so, 2007 to 2010, probably the closest you could call to a sustained period of top class performance, right? Firstly, like I said, for me to call a player world class today, he has not only to have a history of doing that, but he still has to be doing that today, right? Let's say Rooney was world class in that period. Has he replicated that form recently?
Nope.
And for me, that's probably the defining reasons why I can't call him world class right now, is because even if I was to be favourable and to say, do you know what, 2007 to 2010, he was a world-class player. He had the numbers, he was performing on a domestic level, on a continental level. Obviously, with the World Cup, he was coming back from injury, metatarsal broke in 2006, I think. Coming back from fitness problems in 2010. You know, even using that as a reason to excuse him. Compare that period of time to now, last 2 to 3 seasons. He's not replicated that. And for me, that's why in this moment in time, I can't call him a world-class player. That isn't a negative thing. Like I said, obviously we weren't saying this on air, but for those who are listening, we're talking about before, we live in a very extreme society where it's either this right at the bottom or it's right at the top. And it's never an appreciation to say, do you know what, he's an 8 out of 10 player. He's a 7.5 out of 10 player. He's a very, 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 very good player who has the potential to get back to that level, because at the end of the day, he's not even 30 yet, so he's only 29. He's not even 30 yet. There's no reason why, 28 even, there's no reason why you can't get back to that level or even exceed that level, because he has the potential. However,
okay, here's my problem when you say this thing about Rainer Rooney. It's because when I've had debates with you, like the points you bring up to discredit it, like, I can see the logic behind it. But then, when we talk about another complete player, you revert it, so it doesn't really make sense to me. That's what I don't really
understand. Well, you changed that.
Use an example.
For example, like you were like, for example, we're talking in the group chat. Well, we're talking about Ribery, and I said I think that Ribery is a better footballer than Sanchez, in my opinion. You said, okay, that's insanity. He's in from 2006, blah blah blah, etc. And you said you can't just take in that level of play from all those years ago, even though I do disagree with that level of play, but like, let's say it's a fact, you can't take that away. When we'll discuss it in the pod about who's England's best striker, not who
boots from who their best striker for that period. I said, I think it's Wayne Rooney because of this quality and also his history and performance level. And then you were like, nah, Sturridge is a better player now, the way he plays, which is also fair. But that doesn't coincide with your point that you raised and your reason for when you were discussing Ruby Sanchez. So I don't understand why that's a quick walk one way and then.
Let me
get in there because, Ayo, this is where you've kind of got it wrong because Ribery is performing at a high level now. That's the issue. This is the difference. Rooney isn't. So that's why.
He has been. 2014, Ribery's performing at world class level.
He's been injured, fair enough. He's been injured, so he's just coming back from his injury. But before his injury, he was.
To be honest with you, you're talking about a player that only a year ago. Hold on. Sorry. Apologies for interrupting. When you talk about Ribery, we're talking about a player that a year ago was up for best player in the world and was awarded the best player in Europe. Something that Rooney hasn't come close to, firstly.
Yeah.
So we have to use that as a factor. Secondly, we have to factor in the injuries. Injuries took up probably about two.
And about did not go about with a better walk.
Cannavaro won it off the back of a World Cup, which is fair. Ribery was in the running for it for a year long sustained period of world class performance. So that's for me. It's a bit difficult for me to compare Cannavaro being up for it and Ribery being up for it.
But Bayern Munich were actually slapping on every single team. That's
but you know what, Barcelona? But you know what? Hold on. But Spain was dominating when Xavi and Iniesta were up for the awards. It's very rare in this day and age for a dominant player to be up for that kind of award and not play for a dominant team.
That's true.
Yo,
I just want to finish. You know, my counter to Ayo's point. I understand what you're saying in terms of using the logic and. You see some inconsistencies potentially. Essentially, with Ribery, I see a player that only a year ago was up for the Ballon d'Or. Firstly, if we're going to go back to the Rooney thing, using the Rooney Sturridge thing, right? Saying, okay, you're picking Sturridge.
No. Talk about level performance. Ballon d'Or, these awards, we're all telling us to talk about the level of play. Last season.
Okay. Away from the Ballon d'Or, I feel comfortable enough saying, because I was watching Ribery on the throw.
Guardiola.
Sorry, even before, no, before, because obviously, I'm talking about something that was only a year ago.
It was only a year ago. I'm talking about Guardiola.
Ruby was balling out of control.
Before or after Guardiola?
This is, it's a bit of both. It's from,
he wasn't balling out like he was before. He got injured. At that level, was.
When he's played under Guardiola, he has played extremely well. And remember, when we talk about recently, we're not trying to be fickle here, so we can't just use the last 6 months, the last 9 months. We have to use at least a season and a half, 2 seasons, which, by the way, was the same period of time that I used when we were talking about Sturridge Rooney. Because when I was using the logic to say, okay, this is why I think Sturridge merits starting over Rooney, it's not just on the back of this season, it's the fact that he came off an incredible run, even the season prior. And the reason why we could talk about Sturridge being ahead of Rooney...
Can I say something about that?
You were using...
Well, first and foremost, I don't believe in this world class show anyway. But if I did believe in it, Rooney would be world class to me. And the reason why is because I think he's one of the best players in the world. That's it. That's simple.
But I don't understand that. I have a billion to pay. Everyone got different opinions in the world class. I think that my one is more to do with your talent and the fact that you're willing to produce it in a season. So obviously, I think certain seasons where you see guys like, for example, Suarez, he was just pure world class from start to finish. I think Rooney shows his quality enough.
Yeah, man.
Especially in a bigger game. And in fact, people are rage after that.
United fans listen to him.
Hold on. If you want to talk about inconsistency when it comes to me.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about inconsistency when it comes to me, right? Mm. You're the same person that said that You may call a player shit or average, but you're doing it in the context of comparing them to other players. So why is it okay? So why is it okay to contextualize
context
it in
of their team? Context of their team. Let's not get twisted. Context of their team, and that makes sense. You can't say somebody. Okay, like good. It's a good one. I don't know, think or something. Like a good manager of like a firm, and it's a small firm, and then you take it to big firm. That's rubbish. Don't mean it's not a good manager. It's in context of the team, of what he's managing. It makes sense.
Okay, but you're still contextualizing. You're still comparing him in context to the ability around him.
Okay, when have I not?
You're still comparing him to his peers externally. You're comparing him to his peers. So at the end of the day, right? I could easily switch to a school of thought where, do you know what? There's millions of football players. If Rooney is a top 20 out of millions, then by definition, he's a world class player. I could use that context, and it will be valid.
Yeah.
But when we're usually talking about world class players or top class players or whatever, we're not comparing him with the 20 millions or whatever. We're comparing him with his peers. And ultimately, if we're comparing Rooney with his peers,
man, how many different for each person, man?
Yeah. I think. Okay, how many forwards? I don't think that there's many forwards in terms of actual strikers that are better than Rooney, and have been showing their quality for a sustained period of time. And I think I'm sick and tired of, like, we see when Rooney show quality in season. I'm not saying he could be inconsistent, but we see him show quality, especially in the bigger games. And then we'll see a Vine or something like Marco Reus going to bang and, oh my god, this guy is amazing. Well, people don't even watch Donny like that.
And that's fair.
Because I'm sick and tired of people pretending they watch this.
I was sick and tired, mate.
That's what I'm saying. You
needed to say this.
And like, for example, the Hazard thing. It's like, oh my god, what's better than Hazard? How do you know? How many times do you watch this guy play? Like, you've seen Eden Hazard for good 2-3 seasons playing a consistent basis. You see a couple of vines on Marco Reus, something's better than Eden Hazard. I'm not saying you could be
better. Do you know what? That's an argument. I'm not going to disagree with that one bit. I'm not going to disagree with that one bit. You're right, 100%.
And that's the same thing with
that. Same token. But by the same token, if you're not watching the foreign-based players as much, then you can't be as positive in your assessment of saying he's better than him, because you're not seeing the other players. I don't know what came first. I don't know whether it was the gas that came first or the
No, with Rooney, racism. I can't tell.
With British players, always the gas up on fans. You always gas our players up straight away. And then, let's say, if they don't do something like win a tournament on their own, like everyone is expecting them to do, like, then they get run. Which I think is stupid. I think the only player has probably been, the only top British player probably been immune to criticism is probably Steven Gerrard. Because Owen's been brushed, Rooney's been brushed, Ferdinand's been slaughtered, Lampard's been slaughtered, Rooney's been slaughtered. Like, why do we do it to our players? It's like, the same thing with Michael Carrick. It's like, nobody wants to take him in until, like, somebody, their followers, or that.
Who's that? Scoring then?
Guys. Guys, I hate to be a party pooper, but I think we might have to leave it there.
Okay, cool.
Because, the pod's run over, like, hour and 45 minutes. That's too long. People don't want to listen to us for 2 hours, I'm afraid.
That's
not
cool.
But, yeah, cheers for joining us. We'll see you next week. So that's all for this week, folks. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, you can catch all our previous podcasts on iTunes, SoundCloud, and our website, www.touchlinefrocker.co.uk. Be sure to leave a review on iTunes, a like on SoundCloud, or a comment on our website. You can also get us on Twitter, at touchlinefrocker. Leave us some feedback on the pod, anything you think we could improve on, anything that you like, you know, any feedback is welcome. Have a great weekend, guys.
It wasn't easy, but nothing is. No. Woo-hoo! When I feel at the middle, woo-hoo! And I feel that I need a woo-hoo! When I lie and I'm aching all of the time, but I never show what I need to. Young. It's not my problem.